I'm talking to Glenn Bennett, actor and singer-songwriter, and wanted to ask you a few questions, mostly about your songwriting, singing and songwriting aspect of your career. So,
okay.
And why don't we start with sort of your album Record Breakup, and then we'll talk about the live album. So tell me a little bit about the album itself, the songs, and where they came from, which if my sources are correct, you released that in April of 2011, right after you finished in American Idiot on Broadway. Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right, so give me the story of the album.
Well, basically, I mean, Record Breakup is the third, my third kind of full-length album, and I'd actually started writing it a couple of years before it got released. It took the process of the album took about 2 years to write it, and it was kind of about a very specific time and a very specific relationship that I was in. And I think more than anything, it took a couple of years to be able to actually look back on something with some kind of perspective before, you know, songs kind of started to happen. And the way Record Breakup worked, which was different from others before, was that the song Freer, which was the kind of song I released from the album, was the first song I wrote. And at that time, I didn't know that Record Breakup was going to be an album. I'd just written this one song called Freer, and I was in New York, and I wrote it on a piano. And after I kind of, after the song kind of settled and I started kind of playing it out live, it kind of started to pick up a bit of driving force, a bit of momentum, and it kind of, I realized that actually the next album was all going to be centered around this one song. And that was the beginning of the album, and it really kind of captures what the entire essence of Record Breakup is about. And the way the album was designed then is, I mean, Freer is towards the end of the album, and so I kind of wrote the album in reverse. I kind of started at the end and then kind of made my way back through the kind of story, and these songs kind of started falling out of each other, and then I kind of had the idea that I wanted it almost to be just one continuous play. So we kind of messed about with the songs basically kind of going one into the next, and there wasn't kind of a usual gap in between the songs, and until you get to Freer, and then at Freer, then there's like a gap of a minute and a half, which kind of represents, you know, a couple of years later, and then it finishes with Love Wins. So, it was interesting. It's kind of, I guess it's the most kind of concept album that I've designed so far. And it's been kind of it's been good to me, you know, and I enjoyed making it. It was really awesome.
It's a pretty amazing collection of songs, I have to say.
Well, thank you.
It's extraordinary, I think, in a lot of ways. So, what prompted you to go back and record it live and acoustic? What made you want to revisit it that way?
Well, I think what happened was when I was here in New York, I was playing out with a band, and that's the band that are on the album. and we, you know, we played out live a lot, you know, in America, and that's the same sound that you hear on the album. And then when I came back to London in January of this year, I moved back to London to start in Once. And then all of a sudden I was kind of playing, because, you know, I started off as a very, very acoustic, a solo acoustic singer-songwriter, and I was definitely in that genre of guys and their guitars. And then with Record Breakup, I actively wanted to kind of move away from that and bring in more people and more instruments and make it a little bit more electric and a bit more grungy. But then when I found myself back in London, and then I was kind of playing singer-songwriter in Once, it felt like I was kind of really going back to my roots. And I think in a lot of ways, being in Once and playing this acoustic solo singer-songwriter in the show kind of prompted me to, I played one of the first shows that I played, it was actually one of my friends turned around and he said to me, you know, he's been following me, he knows my music and I've known him for a long time. And he said, you know, my favorite part of what you do, he said, is when it's just you and the guitar, and it's great with the band, but when it's just you, there's something about the emotion and the rawness of the songs that really it comes through and the lyrics really stand out because you, there's no other kind of musicians that you're kind of battling with. And it kind of struck a chord in me. And I'd been wanting to do a live version of Record Breakup and just kind of record it as a gig, you know, and when I was playing somewhere one night. And we just kind of decided to take it one step further. I thought, well, how about I just actually go into a studio and invite an audience into the studio and perform the album acoustically to them. And that's what we did. And I think it's nice because I think it gave the songs a completely new, not a new life, but like a new, there's a new essence to them. And I think what it does is it really goes, to me anyway, it feels like acoustically the songs really kind of, the lyrics resonate quite heavily. And with that kind of live sound and with the reactions of the audience and ultimately I think it was, I was pleased with the outcome. You know what I mean? It wasn't something I ever expected to do, but I was pleased with it.
You know, I happened to read a little blurb in some, I can't remember what magazine now, but a little blurb. And I went on to your website and had a listen and ended up like picking up all the records. It's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic.
Awesome. Thank you.
It's wonderful. So then tell me a little bit about the relationship between your career as a singer-songwriter and your career as an actress. You've tended to play, musicians, I've noticed, but it must be a difficult balance to strike, you know, being a stage actor, you know, it's what, 8 shows a week, and it's not like making a movie and then it's done. How do you find time?
Yeah, well, I think, I started in my music career kind of started first, you know, when I was 18, and that's kind of what I began with. And then the theatre, I mean, that was back, you know, when I was kind of in a group and we were signed to Warner Music, and I had this taste of what the kind of the kind of mainstream music industry was like. And I think after being involved in that for 2 years, coming out of that made me go completely the other way and go, and I realized that the music that I was writing and the music that I wanted to create and that I wanted to make, to me at that time, there wasn't anyone I knew within the mainstream music industry who was interested in supporting that kind of music. So I kind of actively forced myself to go in the other direction and set up my own label and decided to do it all independently. Now, the truth of that matter is that trying to be an independent artist and put food on your table sucks. And it's really tough. And I think even now, we all hear the stories every day and we all know that the music industry is an ever-changing business, you know, and 1 minute it's this and 1 minute it's that and 1 minute they want this and 1 minute, and it constantly is in flux. And for me, in order for me to be able to make the music that I wanted to make, I know so many musicians as well that have, you know, have been, there's very few musicians who I've come across over the years who are, you know, who are making a decent living and being able to create and make their own music and tour for long periods of time and who end up sustaining and, you know, having a career. It does happen and people can do it. It just takes a little bit longer. So really for me with the theatre stuff, when I first fell into my first theatre job, which was Taboo when I worked with Boy George, the interesting thing about Taboo was that it was this theatrical production and it enabled me to put a roof over my head and put food on my table, and then I could kind of keep making music. And the nice thing was obviously working and being around somebody like Boy George, who, you know, was an incredibly successful musician and singer. I'm a big fan of his. I think he's an incredible lyricist, and I think he writes beautiful songs and has a great voice. And so actually what happened is all the theatre stuff I've kind of been involved in now have all in some way, shape or form been attached to music. Mm-hmm. So what's been also about it is that I've been able to straddle these two worlds because they're very, very closely connected. It would be different if, you know, I was turning up in like Les Miserables or something like that, that was completely, you know, that it's a very traditional piece of musical theatre. Whereas, you know, doing Taboo, and then I did Rent, and I played the singer-songwriter in Rent, mm-hmm. and then I worked on American Idiot with, you know, with Green Day, and now, you know, coming back to London and being in Once, and now I'm actually playing a singer-songwriter very close to my own life on stage. And what's lovely about Once is that these two worlds have now collided, and I think for a while in my early days, I did struggle, you know, when you asked me, like, about how do you straddle those two things. And I struggled a lot. You know, a lot of people, you know, understand, you know, how you could do music and you could be a stage actor. And there was kind of a real disparity between the two worlds. And I think since I kind of hit my 30s, all of that just kind of disappeared. And I was like, you know what, I don't have anything to prove to anyone. And actually what the important thing is for me to do is to allow me to create a place where I can comfortably make and create pieces of music and pieces of art that I need to. And that's always been my choice as well, whenever I've kind of taken on a show or turned shows down, you know, been asked to do stuff and thought that's just not within the kind of line of fire of what it is that I'm trying to do.
Okay. And when did you first, you just said you started your music career when you were 18. So when did you first learn to play an instrument? When did you write your first song?
I taught myself how to play the guitar when I was on scout camp, when I was about 14 years old. And we went on scout camp, and I remember one of the scout leaders had a left-handed guitar, and it was this old left-handed guitar, and we basically turned it upside down and restrung it the other way to turn it into a right-handed guitar. And I spent about 3 days just kind of mucking around on it, because before that I played the piano and I played the flute. They were the kind of instruments I learned at school. And then when I picked up the guitar, the nice thing about the guitar was that I could carry it around, and it felt much more mobile to me. And then I pretty much started writing music at that age. I think I wrote my first song when I was 14.
Do you remember what it was about?
Oh, God. You know what? I do know what it was about. It was about when my mum and dad got divorced when I was six. Mm-hmm. So I think even at 14 years old, clearly there was something in me that wanted to write songs that were very much based in the darker sides of reality. And lo and behold, I'm still doing it.
Well, it's funny how many people won't answer that question. I'm always curious, and some people won't answer it, but most will, and it's usually embarrassing. So that's an interesting, it's interesting. Okay, so you started playing when you were 14 and writing about you. Okay. So then, tell me about your songwriting process and what comes first, or do songs come to you easily? Do you tinker with them for a long time? Do you throw a lot of things out? What's your process?
I mean, again, that's something that tends to change a lot, and I think at the very beginning, it was very much all about the lyrics and it was all about the words. And I was more interested in getting words out of my head and onto a piece of paper. And then I would pick up a guitar and start mucking around with melodies. And definitely for the first two records, that was definitely the case for that. And then with Record Breakup, it became a little bit more about, it was definitely still based in the lyrical world, but now I kind of had access to all these incredible musicians as well, and so the kind of the craft of the actual melodies and songs and choruses and all that, I became slightly more interested in concentrating on those elements of a song as well, because I think particularly with my first album, I look back at it now and you know, I'm really proud of it and I like their songs, but it was definitely more about, you know, I this is what I want to say, and the words are more important to me than creating kind of a catchy song or a catchy melody. You know, it was more about getting these words out. And just as the years go on, you know, the more you experiment and the more you play with, and now kind of since Record Breakup, but now the kind of new stuff that I'm writing, I'm definitely just much more aware of song structures as a whole. And it's definitely still about words and about lyrics. And I think it always will be. I think I'm kind of more of a poet in that sense than I am a musician.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of been learning more and hopefully getting better at the craft of musicianship over the years. And that's kind of been the process so far.
Are you a confessional poet? Are the lyrics always personal, or do they come from? Certainly, Heaven on Earth, for example, is a song with a political, social message. In general, are your songs from the personal? Or?
I'd say yeah. I think. You know, that's kind of just the nature of what I write and the things that I'm compelled to write. They didn't necessarily always happen to me, you know, but it was about a situation in my life that I witnessed or that I saw somebody else going through or so. But it's definitely always based in truth, and then then the things can take over, and depending on, you know, whether you're trying to be a bit more metaphorical about it or whether you're just being completely down the line and going, this is the situation. And the exciting thing has been able to play with the two, you know?
Mm-hmm. You think that makes for stronger songwriting when it comes from something you've seen and experienced?
Do I think what?
Does that make for stronger songs? Stronger as opposed to...
You know, I think it makes for... It's... Not necessarily. I mean, I think, you know, you can. There's so many things that can make a song, you know, and it's like you could have a song that has terrible lyrics and a really incredible melody or a chorus that you can't, you know, you just can't get out of your head, and that's it. That is its own strength in itself.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I just always related to lyricists and songwriters who were living much more in a world of truth, because I think as human beings, you know, we're very emotional creatures, and I think listening to music and listening to other people's stories, and particularly when you know that is coming from a world of honesty, I think helps you as a human being. It becomes cathartic and therapeutic, and I think everyone needs a bit of that, you know, and everyone needs, you know, a bit of kind of mindless down to pop music to kind of weigh out the two, so you don't get too in your head about things.
Yeah. So you in listening to you talk about Record Breakup, it kind of, and you know, you implied there's sort of a narrative thread through it, and I was thinking about reading your bio, and you know, way back in the 90s, you wrote some of the songs for the boy band. I'm wondering, have you ever thought about writing a musical?
I actually have, and I'm actually in the process of it right now.
Wow. What's it about?
And that's all I can say to you right now.
Okay. That's fantastic.
It's under wraps, but it's been something that has been on my mind for a few years. And... you know, you're definitely not the first person to have said, well, why don't you write your own musical? And I think, again, you know, going back to what we were talking about before, you know, these two worlds, these two different worlds between theatre and music, and now these two worlds colliding and with what I'm doing now, I think that was kind of the final little push that made me realise that actually, and also because of the kind of direct approach that my songs take, and they're very kind of conversational in those songs, and I think that the more I kind of went back across some old ones and also some new ones, that they could very much live in a world where characters can inhabit these songs and use them as forms of conversation.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree. I think that would be Very exciting. Thank you very much.
Great.
Speaking of new music, tell us about the Christmas song that you played at the at your show.
So about 6 or 8 weeks ago, I decided to write a Christmas song, which was incredibly late in the day, because I think most people start writing Christmas songs in June and make sure that they kind of get them out. And it's something that I think a lot of artists, when it gets to this time of year, I think it always crosses your mind, but it always crosses your mind a little bit too late.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I should write a Christmas song. And then I think other times, you know, you steer away from writing a Christmas song because, you know, it depends in what direction you want to go with it. And for me, I kind of didn't really know how the song was going to kind of come about. And it actually, Father Christmas Knows, the song, this one actually started musically, and I've been playing this guitar lick for a long time, and it had been in my head. And then the more I kind of started playing this guitar lick, the more I could start hearing these Christmas bells in the background. And then kind of the melody started to come to me, and actually I wrote the chorus of it first, and, you know, these lyrics of, I don't suppose that Father Christmas knows all the bad things I've done this year. And so after I'd kind of written this chorus, I realized that actually, so what this song wanted to be was about, you know, the black sheep of the family. And which again, I think no matter who you are or where you come from, or, you know, it, being a black sheep of a family can exist in so many different forms. But I also wanted to keep it, you know, the songs, rhythmically it's quite upbeat and it's got quite a, you know, it's got, you know, a catchy tempo and a melody to it. And I wanted to keep it like that to offset the slightly darker side of the lyrics.
It's cool. So having your own label, I think, allows you to, the fact that you wrote 6 or 8 weeks ago was less of an issue. Tell us about having your own a label. It's a big focus of our site, actually. Artists who are putting out their own music and doing it on their own. Tell us a little bit about that and the challenges and benefits.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, I started back in 2003 when I set Convoy up. And for me, obviously, the first step after kind of setting up the label was getting a distribution deal that allowed me to, you know, have the albums and stuff in the shops, which actually now in this day and age is becoming less and less important. But then, you know, it was still very much people were going out and buying CDs, and downloads and everything was still kind of in its infancy, you know, compared to what it is now. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the big initial hurdle was getting all of that sorted. And then I was lucky, I knew a woman who worked in PR, and she kind of stepped in and was helping me a lot on with the business PR side of things and doing the kind of the lead ups to each of the albums. And but ultimately it really was just a decision that allowed me to continue to create and put out music, you know, without having somebody breathing down my neck telling me, you know, that's not right and that's not right and this isn't right. And I think ultimately, you know, I for me anyway, and I don't know that, I have no idea what's going to happen in 5 or 10 years' time, but I think the freedom that it's allowed me in order to make music that I want to make, I think, and this could be true of a lot of artists, you know, a lot of artists, when they put their first album out, the first album is amazing. And then you can hear in their second album, you can hear where the label has stepped in and gone, right, you try and make an album like the other one. And I think so many artists get robbed of their creativity because they're not given the freedom to experiment and to just create and make music, because they've become a commodity, you know. And that side of the business kind of scares me, and that's kind of why I stayed away from it. But I think with the dawn of, you know, or the internet being so huge now, and there's so many incredible sites, and, you know, I use things like Bandcamp, and I'm signed now with a company called AWOL, who are called Artists Without a License, and they deal with all my digital digital distribution. So they take care of all the digital stuff, and then I'm signed with a distributor in the UK called Proper, who deal with the physical stuff. And whilst I do still shift some physical copies, it's basically all downloads now.
Yeah.
And I think that's just the nature of the business and the direction that it's gone in. And it's exciting, and it gives people the opportunity to make, you know, make music. And even with, you know, just music software and music programs in general have advanced so much that now, you know, anybody, you really can create a song on a computer now, and you can get it and put it out on the internet and try and find an audience. I think this mistake that some people make is they rely too much on Facebook and Twitter and social media, thinking that, you know, oh, all of a sudden somebody somewhere is going to see my Facebook page or see a YouTube video of me, and kaboom, I'm going to be the next big thing. And I think actually, the more that the internet becomes bigger, and the more that YouTube and Facebook and Twitter become these massively huge ways of people connecting, that it's becoming more and more important for you to be a very, very solid live performer. Because I think now people are hungry for that more than ever, because it gives them a chance to get their face out of their phone and actually connect with a real person singing real words and real music.
I'm glad you said that. It's a very good point. It's an important point. So who are your musical influences?
My musical influences, when I first started out, I used to listen to a lot of angry female musicians. So when I was kind of 14, 15, you know, I was a big fan of like Alanis Morissette and Tori Amos and, you know, Cheryl Crow, and I was very kind of attracted to the female, and I think more from a lyrical point of view, because even at that time, like those women and the lyrics that they were using, I just found them so interesting and so direct and so forward, and that really resonated with me. And then, I mean, one of the queen of those people, a friend of mine at the time gave me a copy of Arnie DeFranco's album Dilate. And I remember sitting, listening to the entire record for the first time, and I didn't move. I just sat and listened to the entire thing. And it punched me in the bottom of the stomach. The way that she wrote, and the lyrics and her metaphors and the style of her playing and the simplicity, but it was so rich and so dense that it kind of blew me away. And that was a big turning point for me writing-wise as well. And she was a massive influence on me. And then it was even more awesome when I met her 2 years ago and actually played on stage with her, which was brilliant.
Wow. That must have been awesome. That's absolutely fantastic. So,
really cool.
To go back to the live show, your show, what was it, Friday? Sometimes I lose track of time. On Friday, was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. It was, that's a great venue, and it felt a little bit like a, I don't know, almost like a family get together in a way. You had a way of making the room feel very intimate.
Right.
But I'm wondering, why only one show? Why not a tour? I guess in part because you're on stage now in London.
Right.
But why not a tour?
Yeah. No, I think, well, obviously because, you know, I can only take a certain amount of time off.
Yeah.
You know, kind of holiday-wise and stuff. So for me, it was more about, you know, just being able to come and do at least one show where I could kind of touch base with everyone again, and that's always been very important to me. You know, whilst I, you know, I'm away and I'm having to do an 8-show schedule, you know, before I ever walk into any kind of contract, I always make it very clear that I need certain amounts of time off throughout the year in order for me to play and do shows, because it's, you know, I never want that side of, I never want that to take over and not allow me to do that stuff. So, and, you know, I'm lucky, like, people respect that and they give me that time. So, yeah, so I think one was enough this time. And also with this Christmas single coming out, and it's been kind of mental busy, so I needed a few days to myself as well, just to chill out.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay. Well, I think that may be That may be all my questions. What's next? What's your next project? You've hinted at you're writing a musical. What's your next project?
Yeah, so hang on that. I've also, I've just finished another album, which is written and done, and that's going to start to begin to surface next year, but there's going to be some details coming out about that in January. And then my plan is to do what I'm done up with once, which should be around about April time, is to get back out on the road and do some more touring in the UK and in the US.